The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily radio show. We're off and running. It's still been really, really chilly, cold every morning. Finally, we're getting a little bit of snow. It's amazing to me, as cold as it's been and as overcast as the skies have been, that we haven't had more snow this week. But it's been especially frigid. Hopefully that will soon lift, and we'll get back to some nice, sunnier, warmer days. It does make you appreciate the sunnier weather when you have a few days like we've had here in central Oklahoma. Thanks to Richard Palmer, by the way, for sitting in yesterday on the program from Edstone. I got quite a few comments, quite a few emails saying they really enjoyed the show. Here's one that says, what a great show Richard Palmer gave today. Very, very interesting. Lots of excellent information. Keep up the great work for all of us listening. And another one, another one writes, thanks to Mr. Palmer for an excellent show. Some interesting things he talked about, although sad how the experts and government officials have become. And then one final one says, well done. I'm always excited to hear from whom I consider to be our Walter Cronkite, Mr. Palmer. It says the tie-ins into all that the church is teaching about present world conditions and the recalling of past teachings from Herbert Armstrong and Mr. Flurry strengthened the reality of the Eternal's words to mankind through his prophets both of old and today. So that's a few of our viewers writing in response to Richard Palmer's program yesterday. You can get to that podcast, by the way, at the trumpet.com website. And of course, you can get to the live stream of this show, as many of you are watching even as we speak, at thetrumpet.com/live. So spread the word. Well, you'll be happy to know that I haven't been able to watch much of the sham impeachment hearing. That's I guess this is more going toward the conviction. They're aiming for a conviction. They're not going to get it. But in any event, the circus trial continues. The Emmy Award-winning impeachment hearing continues in the Senate. We do have, even though I haven't seen much of it, we do have all of the most important clips. So you want to stay tuned here for the rest of this first segment. But just to give you an idea, I think they went on for 8 hours yesterday as the Democrats were, you know, making their case. And they get to the end, I forget who the attorney was, that was basically saying, you know what happened? President Trump, that he incited this riot, and an hour into it, he reportedly called Senator Tommy Tuberville, the new senator coming from, I believe it was Georgia or one of the southern states. In any event, this lawyer says, but he instead mistakenly called Senator Mike Lee. And so he was talking about protesting the certification, even as the riot was happening. That shows you where his mind was. And then right as Pat Leahy, he's the Democrat activist that's presiding over the impeachment. He's the one who's supposed to be the judge. Right as he's putting an end to the day's proceedings, Senator Lee, Mike Lee, gets up and says, what that lawyer just said about me, it's not true. It never happened. And I'd like for that to be stricken from the record. And then to see Leahy, who can barely put together a coherent sentence, by the way, he should have retired years ago, but to see Leahy scramble with his aides trying to figure out what to do. And here are these attorneys getting up, and what are they quoting from? They're quoting from news reports. They live in this echo chamber where all that they hear are Democrat talking points. So here is this attorney making the case to convict Donald Trump, to ensure that he never runs for office again, And he's quoting from some news media report that's not even true. And Senator Lee gets up and exposes it. And this is how the circus comes to an end yesterday, last night. It's a complete and total joke. What a spectacle this has become. What a spectacle Washington, D.C. has become. And speaking of the case that they're trying to make, how do you, on the one hand, lay out all of these facts proving that it was planned ahead of time, proving that days before January the 6th, you have all of these thugs plotting to storm the Capitol? How do you, on the one hand, lay out the facts for that case and at the same time say that it was President Trump's speech that day that incited the mob? Well, that's what they're trying to prove. That's what they're trying to show. In a lot of ways, people have talked about how President Trump's lawyers from 2 days ago didn't do a very good job. In a lot of ways, the Democrat attorneys are laying out the case for President Trump's team. Of course he didn't incite this mob. They're leaving out, of course, they're leaving out the statements he made in his speech on January the 6th. Now make sure you go and you protest peacefully. We don't want any violence. And they've got to take all of that out and then try to piece together footage. And all the dramatic footage, all the camera angles, all of the security shots. What happened outside the Capitol, inside the Capitol? An armed insurrection. Well, we'll come to that in just a bit. In fact, Tucker Carlson last night, he's exposed a lot of the lies surrounding the five deaths. Five people died as a result of that protest gone wild. Five people died. How did they die? Well, that should be, you would think that they would be, the media, I mean, the propaganda media, you would think they'd be interested in how the facts of the matter, were there weapons involved? Because they just state it blank, they just state it as a matter of fact that they were killed, all five of them killed. Here's Tucker Carlson last night talking about those five victims. Clip 11.
Five Americans died on the Capitol grounds on January 6th. You've heard that. You hear it incessantly, including from Republican office holders. Five dead. But that doesn't really tell you very much. It's the details, as always, that matter. Who were these people and how did they die? That's how you understand what actually happened. So with that in mind, here are the facts as of tonight. Four of the five who died that day were Trump supporters. The fifth was a Capitol Hill police officer who apparently also supported Donald Trump. The first among them was the 34-year-old woman from Georgia called Roseanne Boyland. Later video footage suggested she may have accidentally been trampled by the crowd. We're still not sure. The second casualty was 55-year-old Kevin Greeson. Greeson died of heart failure while talking to his wife on a cell phone outside the Capitol. The third was 50-year-old Benjamin Phillips of Ringtown, Pennsylvania. He died of a stroke on the grounds of the Capitol. There is no evidence that Phillips rioted or was injured by rioters or even went inside the Capitol building. Fourth person to die, the only person to die that day of intentional violence, was 35-year-old Ashley Babbitt, a military veteran from San Diego, when she was shot to death by a Capitol Hill police lieutenant. Babbitt's death was caught on video, so hers is the best documented death that took place that day. And yet it is surprising how little we know about it. Authorities have refused to release the name of the man who shot her or divulge any details of the investigation they say they've done.
That's Tucker Carlson last night talking about the five deaths. The only one who died as a result of intentional violence is Ashley Babbitt, and she was shot by the police officer that we don't know anything about. His identity has still been concealed. Ashley Babbitt, shot, gunned down. All five of these victims, from what we know, were Trump supporters. And yet it was the Trump supporters who supposedly led the armed insurrection. And they've got to have all of the footage of them escorting Mike Pence out through the hallways or Mitt Romney to safety because they almost died. Everyone's AOC. Everyone was, doesn't matter if you were 58 steps away or if you were a mile and a half away from the violence. We're 1,500 miles away. That's pretty close compared to others in the world. Everybody could have died in the armed insurrection from January the 6th. What about the officer? Officer Sicknick. He's the one who died. We were told his head was bashed by a fire extinguisher. The Trump supporters were just beating this officer, pummeling him, and he died on the spot. Well, the Revolver news site revealed yesterday that at the end of the day, the protests, remember, went on for about 4 hours. And then at the end of the day, this officer, Officer Sicknick, he texted his brother, I believe it was, and said that, hey, I'm okay, everything's fine. And then from there, the details are kind of murky. We don't really know too much about how that he died, except for what the propaganda media has reported and continues to report even as late as yesterday. The fact that he was killed. He was murdered. That's what they're saying. Here's Darren Beatty. We've played clips of him recently. But here he is. He's the one that runs the Revolver website. Here he is talking about the murky details surrounding Officer Sicknick's death. Clip one.
On Wednesday, multiple hours after the protests have concluded, Sicknick, that is the officer in question, texted his brother Ken that very night, and he said he was basically fine. He said, quote unquote, he was pepper sprayed twice, but that he was in good shape. That's on Wednesday, the evening after the protests concluded. Now, a very weird thing happened. The next day, in the afternoon, the officer's family got phone calls conveying the information that Officer Sicknick was dead. Now, one really weird thing about this, the phone calls, were they coming from the hospital? Were they coming from doctors? Were they coming from the Capitol Police, the FBI, the DOJ? No, they were coming from media reporters. So somehow certain privileged media personnel were the first to receive this sensitive information circling, quote unquote, among law enforcement officials that Sicknick was dead. Now it gets even weirder. The Capitol Police spokesperson comes out after these rumors circulated and said, wait a second, he's not dead. Only quickly to reverse that right after saying, oh, now he actually is dead. So there's something very weird there. Why did the media know this first? Why did the Capitol Police then deny this only right after to say, oh, after all, he was dead?
That's Darren Beatty from the Revolver news site. Something is really rotten here. I'm supposing the officer's dead. I'm not saying he's secretly alive somewhere. But the circumstances surrounding this, the fact that he said to his brother he was just fine, at the end, and then his family finds out the next day, January the 7th, and they find out from the media, I understand your son's dead. I understand your son was murdered. And then his supervisor says, no, he's not dead. Then he comes out and says, yeah, he is dead. He is dead. Sorry, we got that wrong. Listen to Beatty, one more clip from yesterday, clip two.
So sometime between Sicknick being fine, healthy, and back in his office on Wednesday night, he died effectively early Thursday evening from an apparent stroke. Now, what of this stroke? There's no evidence of this. Again, no medical report released. Acting Attorney General Jeffrey Rosen says the DOJ will, quote, spare no resources in getting to the bottom of what happened. Yet, over a month after his death, zero information has been disclosed regarding his death, regarding the medical reports. Even weirder, autopsy. No autopsy has been released. These take just 2 to 4 hours to perform. No evidence. No identification of him receiving any fatal injuries despite all the surveillance at the Capitol. And to cap it all off, he was apparently cremated.
So he dies of a stroke the next day. There's no, we're well over a month after January the 6th, by the way. And as Beatty brings out there, we don't know anything about the autopsy. And then he's hurriedly cremated. And then he's held up as a martyr. He was trying to save the senators, the congresspeople. He's the hero. Well, I mean, maybe he was performing some heroic acts. But why? Why are we not being told the truth? Why have so many lies spread about Officer Sicknick? Listen to this media montage. Tucker, I believe, played this last night on his show, clip 10.
Officer Brian Sicknick died after being hit in the head with a fire extinguisher during the hours-long attack.
They beat a Capitol Police officer to death with a fire extinguisher.
Officer Brian Sicknick died after being hit in the head with a fire extinguisher during the fight.
He died at the age of 42 after he was bludgeoned with a fire extinguisher.
Everything you heard right there was a lie. None of that was true. I think it was the New York Times or one of the publications that came out and quietly said, well, those initial reports about Sicknick were not true. None of it was true. You're not going to hear CNN or MSNBC follow up with all the talking heads saying, you know, yeah, he wasn't beaten to death. From what we understand, he died of a stroke. It wasn't even related. It wasn't even related to the protest. And then, yeah, he was, well, there's nothing to report about the autopsy because that's confidential. And he was cremated. This is CNN. It says here, President Joe Biden and First Lady Jill Biden arrived at the U.S. Capitol late Tuesday night to pay their respects to fallen U.S. Capitol Police Officer Brian Sicknick, whose remains are lying in honor in the building's famous rotunda. Less than 4 weeks after he died after responding to the riot that erupted in the building. Listen to CNN. This is the more recent reporting. Less than 4 weeks after he died, after responding to the riot that erupted in the building. So it happened sometime after. They're not going to say it was the day after. Oh, no. No, you don't need to know that detail. All that you need to know is that he was killed. And it was an armed insurrection. CNN says, in an appearance lasting a few minutes, the president and first lady entered the rotunda where several U.S. Capitol Police officers were stationed, including two officers flanking Sicknick's remains. See, now all of a sudden, they love the police. They love the police. They left them high and dry all last year. David Dorn gets shot in the back of the head. No reporting on that. I mean, that's on video, too. All of a sudden, they love footage. They love footage of violence. Last year, they were telling us it was mostly peaceful, even as we saw the violence. We saw it going down. And the police taking knees, the police on the run, the police getting beat up in the middle of a street in broad daylight. And Joe Biden and all the Democrats, and they said nothing. They said nothing. Kamala Harris was trying to bail out the thugs. Get them back on the street so they can hit policemen again. But now they've got to pay their respects to the police officer who died of a stroke. It says Biden placed his hand on the table displaying Sicknick's remains before he and the First Lady each placed their hands over their hearts and Biden crossed himself. It was a very religious moment. I mean, this is Emmy Award winning. This is an Emmy Award winning scene. This is made for TV. Perfect. It's perfect for TV. Just like the sham impeachment. It says, the somber ceremonial arrival began at 9:30 p.m. Eastern on Tuesday at the east front of the Capitol with Sicknick's remains arriving in a hearse. A Capitol Police officer carried the box containing his remains up the steps as police officers stood at attention outside the building. that had been ransacked by insurrectionists almost a month before. It says House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer announced Friday that Sicknick would lie in honor under the historic dome. Lying in state is typically reserved, listen to this, it's typically reserved for leaders of American government, but they've set aside this space. I don't know how many days this is to go on, but this is now for Officer Sicknick, who died of a stroke. I mean, we have nothing against this man. It's a tragic loss for his family, I'm sure. He was in his 40s. It was unexpected. But the media found out first. And the media were saying he was beaten with a fire extinguisher. Must have been one of those Proud Boys. It surely was a Trump supporter. And it's all fake news. And even the ceremony underneath the rotunda, it's fake. It's fake because they won't tell you the truth about his death. So it's all for show. And we're used to this. Look at what set off the citywide riots in Kenosha last year. We just were shown the last little bitty teeny weeny clip of the officer shooting that man in the back. And then he's paralyzed. This was when they hated the police, by the way. But let that go. They show us the last few seconds. He's shot in the back. And it triggers a riot that destroys Kenosha. And then what do we find out later? Well, the earlier footage, if you want to show the footage, the earlier footage shows this man, the perpetrator. It shows him tackling these officers. We learn that he's carrying a weapon. He has a knife. We learn that he won't submit to the police, their orders. And then they finally shoot. We learn why the police officers were showing up there in the first place. Because his girlfriend, I believe it was terrified. So she called the police. This was when the police were the bad guys, right? This was when the burning down of Kenosha was justified. Now you look at the show. It's all for show. They go to pay their respects. You got Pelosi there. You've got Schumer there. It's sickening and appalling. The fact that these lies have to be exposed when you have so many powerful voices in media with so many more resources than what we have at this program or even Tucker Carlson or anyone else. But they don't want to tell you the truth. It's all about the story. The facts don't matter. The facts do not matter. Listen to Jake Tapper. This is from, you know about the fire extinguisher. That's from a few weeks ago. Over and over again. He was bludgeoned. And this is Jake Tapper just yesterday. Clip 3.
We saw a police officer, Capitol Police officer, shoot one of the insurrectionists, four other people were killed that day, including Capitol officer Brian Sicknick, whose death we did not see in this, but it was really absolutely horrifying and chilling.
He says Sicknick's death was horrifying and chilling. That's how he describes the stroke, I guess. So he's still going with the fire extinguisher line. The only thing he got right in that statement was the officer that shot Ashley Babbitt in the neck. Because we all saw that. That's on video. But the rest, notice he says there four other people were killed. One died of a stroke. One died of a heart attack. Sicknick evidently died of a stroke. And Jake Tapper says the four others were killed. What does that imply? What does he want you to take away from his reporting? That this was a violent insurrection, that all the Trump supporters had weapons, and that five people were killed because of it. All that we know, as Tucker brought out in his piece, Ashley Babbitt was the only protester to die from intentional violence, from someone actually pulling a trigger or using a weapon. And in that case, it was the police officer, the Capitol Hill police officer doing the shooting. Not Ashley Babbitt. She was shot and killed. Jake Tapper says four others were killed as well. And he even says that Sicknick was killed on that day. The day he texted his brother and said, yeah, I got pepper sprayed a bit, but I'm fine. Everything's fine. Listen to Anderson Cooper last night and this wild, wild comparison that he makes, clip four.
You know, part of it, I think, just based on what you were just saying, it comes to mind the idea of otherizing people is something I think we saw a lot of over the last 4 years. I mean, it's something we've seen a lot over the last decades, but it's so easy to otherize people, to make people other than American, other than patriotic, other than human, you know, and we've seen it in Bosnia, we've seen it in Rwanda, where radio was telling people, the, you know, Hutus were telling the radio listeners that Tutsi were cockroaches, for, you know, getting them ginned up for genocide. And you see it in these videos where people who claim they are patriots are in the face of a police officer calling him, you know, as we're seeing it right there. And you know, gouging out the eye of one, you know, squeezing one in, you know, suffocating one in a doorway.
Yeah, we saw it in Rwanda, you know, the mass genocide in Rwanda. And then we saw it on January the 6th. Yeah, these so-called patriots, they're not patriots. They're insurrectionists, and there's 74 million of them. That's CNN reporting. This is CNN. That's CNN just last night. Five people were killed, says Jake Tapper. And there's Anderson Cooper comparing January 6th to the Rwandan genocide from the 1990s. It's unbelievable, but that's just typical. That's not surprising to any of you, I know. It's still hard to stomach. Exposing the truth. Exposing the lies. About January the 6th. What a story they're telling. It's all about the narrative. I mentioned the the fact that on the one hand, they're trying to lay out the fact that it was all premeditated. It was planned in advance. This is the Democrat Stacey Plaskett yesterday pointing out how that this was planned ahead of January the 6th. Listen to her, clip five.
Federal law enforcement warned of these threats also. On January 3rd, a Capitol Police intelligence report warned of a violent scenario in which Congress itself could be the target of the angry supporters of President Trump on January 6th. According to that report, obtained by the Washington Post, supporters of the current president see January 6, 2021, as the last opportunity to overturn the results of the presidential election. This sense of desperation and disappointment may lead to more incentive to become violent. Unlike previous post-election protests, the targets of the pro-Trump supporters are not necessarily the counter-protesters as they were previously, but rather Congress itself is the target for January 6. The day before the riot stormed the Congress, an FBI office in Virginia also issued an explicit warning that extremists were preparing to travel to Washington to commit violence and, quote, war. According to internal reports, the FBI report cited to an online post where the user declared that Trump supporters should go to Washington and get violent.
So what's the truth? Read between the lines and see what it is she's essentially admitting. She's accidentally revealing the truth about what went down on January the 6th. The truth is that the FBI, that Congress, that the Capitol Hill Police, they knew. They knew it was coming. And they didn't do anything about it. Mark Meadows, he's the former chief of staff for President Trump. He said this week that the president offered to put 10,000 National Guard troops there around the Capitol We know they were spilling into the city as it was, but the president offered to secure the Capitol. And then you see all of this video footage of the police just ushering people in. And then you hear about all these murky details regarding the death of Officer Sicknick. It's all a show. It's all for fake. There's some violence that happened that day, of course. But look at how it's been manipulated, twisted and distorted by the media, by the Democrats. So much so that you've got Sicknick's remains in the rotunda. It's all part of the show. It's all part of the narrative. If they knew ahead of time that this was coming, then why didn't they secure the complex? Why weren't there more policemen there? Why did they open the doors in some cases? Well, they knew it was coming, and the truth of it is, and this really gets to the scandalous part of all this news, of all these events. They knew it was coming, and they allowed it to play out because it served their purpose. We can't have Trump or anyone else talking about the election steal anymore. We don't want to hear another word about how it was rigged. And so this served their purpose well. And they've used it ever since as a pretext to blot out the truth regarding November the 3rd. I've got some other material here about the police, the Capitol Hill police chief that was, I think he was fired a day or two after January the 6th. And he, what he says, too, he sent a long letter to Nancy Pelosi laying out some of the details of what happened leading up to January the 6th and so on. I don't have time to get to it all. One final clip, though. This is, again, from the Democrat lawyer, Stacey Plaskett, from her speech yesterday, clip 7.
This year is 20 years since the attacks of September 11th. And almost every day, I remember that 44 Americans gave their lives to stop the plane that was headed to this Capitol building. I thank them every day for saving my life and the life of so many others. Those Americans sacrifice their lives for love of country, honor, duty, all the things that America means. The Capitol stands because of people like that. This Capitol that was conceived by our founding fathers, that was built by slaves, that remains through the sacrifice of service men and women around the world. And when I think of that, and I think of these insurgents, these images incited by our own president of the United States attacking this Capitol to stop the certification of a presidential election.
Another award-winning performance there. She's a wonderful actress. She's right up there with AOC, 9/11, Rwanda, Pearl Harbor. Somebody's got to compare it to the Holocaust eventually. That's what went down on January the 6th, they say. The truth, if anyone cares, the truth is very different. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Freedom is one of the most sought-after ideals in human history. Man's search for freedom has taken him into the fiercest of protests, struggles, revolutions, civil wars, even world wars. Today, in the midst of free societies, many continue to fight for what they perceive as ever greater freedoms. And yet, many of these same people are actively fighting against law. Few people understand that this war against law actually undermines true freedom. To learn more, request Gerald Flurry's booklet, No Freedom Without Law. In this free booklet, you will see what the Bible says about the latter-day spirit of rebellion and lawlessness that is now so common in our nations today. Also request America Under Attack. In this booklet, you will learn more about the spirit behind this attack on law. You'll see where this is leading. Both booklets are offered freely at no cost or obligation to you. Request No Freedom Without Law and America Under Attack. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. This is KPCG FM, and this is The Trumpet Daily.
If you had to be stuck in an elevator with either President Trump, Mike Pence, or Jeff Sessions, who would it be?
Does one of us have to come out alive?
There's Kamala Harris joking about killing Donald Trump or Mike Pence, but, you know, she's joking. It's no big deal. That's okay. That's okay to joke about. And we heard that a lot for 4 years. For 4 years. And it was totally fine. There was a story, this was in Richard Stack the other day. The statistics coming in about violence in the United States during the year 2020. And for a number of cities, for a number of years, murder rates were actually declining. There's a few exceptions, like Chicago and such. But last year, it went in the other direction. Suddenly, abruptly, more murder. And who's responsible? Because we're really on that now. We're talking about inciting violence. Why are there so many more murders in 2020? It says here, many Americans probably aren't surprised to learn that 2020 was one of the most violent years in recent memory. This is from Zero Hedge. A solid break with the decades-long trend of lower national crime rates. It says, in addition to BLM marches across the nation that enabled waves of looting, along with more than a dozen killed, 2020 was, generally speaking, a year of unrest as millions of Americans trapped inside their homes lashed out. So who's responsible for this? These people lashing out because of the lockdown. Or picking up weapons and heading to destroy cities like Kenosha. Who incited that? Doesn't matter. It was justified, we were told. It was justified. We have to make a point for George Floyd. We have to make a point for the man that was shot in Kenosha. It says here, according to an analysis of crime data collected from the cities noted above, homicide rates jumped by 30% from 2019 to 2020, while gun assault and aggravated assault rates climbed 8% and 6% respectively. You think they're going to care about these statistics in Washington? Are any of these victims going to be honored in the rotunda at Congress? Any of them? It says, and while crime typically follows a seasonal cycle, with murder rates rising in the summer and falling in the winter, last year, crime was up during every month compared with the year prior, every single month. It didn't even follow the normal cycle, up, down, up, down. It just was on the increase every month. Who caused that? What's behind that? Well, to make a more broad point, my father, in the latest Trumpet magazine, this is on page 5, this little sidebar piece. But he makes the point there. I brought up this example a couple days ago. He says, if you live like Sodom and Gomorrah, you die like Sodom and Gomorrah. Universal sin leads to universal destruction. At its actual core, it's not even a Democrat thing. But they've certainly had their hand in a lot of incitement. Now, we've played the montage before. Should have included that one from Kamala in the montage. Do we have to come out alive? Can I kill them in the elevator? And then everyone has a good laugh. It's hilarious. It's hilarious. Live like Sodom and die like Sodom. There was a time when Sodom and Gomorrah was just a beautiful, Abraham and Lot were trying to spread out, and Lot looked at the Jordan Valley and thought, well, I want that area. It was lush, it was productive, it was fruitful. And then those cities got caught up into all kinds of disgusting, vile, filthy sins. And you can read about it in Genesis 19. It's difficult to read. You can't imagine a society being that perverse. It says in 2 Peter 2, I mean, that history is there for us. It's a lesson for us. 2 Peter 2, 6, it says, and turning the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah into ashes, condemn them with an overthrow, making them an example unto those that after should live ungodly. What happens when we live ungodly lifestyles? What happens when you turn to violence and murder and all kinds of sexual deviance? What happens? That word, for example, in Strong's Concordance, it means an exhibit for imitation or warning. You see, it's there for us to learn from. What happened to Sodom and Gomorrah in the end? Verse 7, it says, and delivered just Lot, vexed with the filthy conversation of the wicked, it says, for that righteous man dwelling among them and seeing and hearing vexed his righteous soul from day to day with their unlawful deeds. Every day he saw what was happening in his city, in his community, and it vexed his soul. It just went on and on and on for years. And God finally said to Lot, look, you've got to get your family out of there. You've just got to get them out. What were they doing there? Well, we know about the sodomy. That's in Genesis 19. This is in Ezekiel 16, verses 49 and 50. It says, behold, this was the iniquity of your sister Sodom. Pride, it says, fullness of bread, and abundance of idleness was in her and in her daughters. Neither did she strengthen the hand of the poor and the needy. And they were haughty, it says, and committed abomination before me. Therefore I took them away as I saw good. You live like Sodom, and well, you die like Sodom as well. Look at our society, look at our world, look at our nation, look at our families, look at our communities, look at our leaders. Look at what is on the television. Look at the lies that are reported, like I covered in the first segment. There's no truth. There's no truth in the devil. He is the father of lies, said Jesus. Here we are, truth is being cast to the ground. And so many of our leaders, they just carry on self-righteously, as if it's just going to continue on into, you know, centuries. Even as they raid the treasury, even as our money loses its value, even as trillions and trillions of dollars are printed, no truth, the economy just hanging by a thread, and then the perversions, and then the upside down family, Sodom and Gomorrah, That's what we have to come out of. And even as bad as it was hard for Lot's wife. She turned around. She gazed longingly at her communities, even as they were going up in flames. Mr. Armstrong said in Mystery of the Ages, I think one of the greatest tests that everyone whom God has called faces is giving up this world and being part of it. That's the great test for you and for me, is to just give it up, to turn away from it. It's not easy to do because of the pulls of the flesh, because of the power of the devil. He's the prince of the power of the air. He's the God of this world, and he is a master at making filth look like it's a wonderful blessing. Making filth and evil look like it's righteous. It has a show of righteousness. 2 Timothy 3. It looks pretty religious. It looks right. He's an angel of light, after all. God says in Luke 17, this is quoting Jesus, verse 26, and as it was in the days of Noah, so shall it also be in the days of the Son of Man. They did eat, they drank, they married wives, and they were given in marriage until the day that Noah entered into the ark, and the flood came and destroyed them all. Likewise also, verse 28, as it was in the days of Lot, we went through this the other day, but it's worth repeating. They did eat, they drank, they bought, they sold, they planted, they builded. I mean, they just carried on. They were living the good life. There was some riches and some prosperity there still. Verse 29, it says, but the same day that Lot went out of Sodom, it rained fire and brimstone from heaven and destroyed them all. Even thus shall it be in the day when the Son of Man is revealed. It's going to be exactly like that in the day that the Son of Man is revealed. It'll be exactly like that in the days leading up to the return of Jesus Christ. That's what Jesus Christ said. That's what he prophesied. If you live like Sodom, you're going to die like Sodom. This is going to affect every human being who lives on earth. These prophecies of God, this comparison that Jesus makes, or Peter, or Ezekiel, or Isaiah, or the Apostle Jude. It's in his little book as well, that history. And yet people will scoff. Peter himself, he said in 2 Peter 3, knowing this first, that there shall come in the last days scoffers walking after their own lusts. They're going to come, they're walking after their own lusts, and they're going to scoff at the prophecies of God. Oh, that's not going to happen. Come on. Fire from heaven, universal destruction, can't happen. No way can that happen. And then just look at the violent communities we're living in. Look at the broken families. Look at the sickness from head to toe. Faint of heart, it says also in Isaiah 3. Isaiah 1, I believe it is. Faint-hearted, wicked, drenched in sin. No truth. This is from the Peter booklet. It says, you can see that Peter's thinking was focused on the end of the world. We too need to get our minds on the end of the world. It didn't happen in Peter's time, but it is about to happen today. We're living through the last few minutes of mankind's rule on this earth. It says, like Lot's wife, most people cannot face the fact that this world is about to end. Even as they read daily headlines about the proliferation of terrifying weapons of mass destruction, they scoff. Even as they see people suffer, even as they see young people being trafficked as sex slaves, even as they see soaring crime statistics, rising murder rates, even as they see trillions and trillions of dollars printed off, paper money, fake money, Monopoly money. They scoff. They say, oh, how could we be at the end of this world? This is a wonderful world. We love this world. It has a few messy spots, but come on. They scoff. It says in verse 5, this is 2 Peter 3, for this they willingly are ignorant of, that by the word of God the heavens were of old, and the earth standing out of the water and in the water, whereby the world that then was being overflowed with water perished. That's talking about the days leading up to the flood. They scoffed and scoffed and scoffed for a century, in fact. How much faith did it take for Noah to just continue right on building that ark? Even as the weather was pretty nice outside, he just kept building and building and building. And one day the flood came. In the Peter booklet it says, Christ said it would be like Noah's time in these latter days, but evil men scoff today at the Bible teaching about Noah and the flood. Just as they did anciently, they scoff at Christ's words. It says they willingly refuse to see. They willingly refuse to see. He says, finally, God's people must understand deeply that the era of man ruling man is about over. Mankind's end is near. And we all need to understand that to our core. See, the end is near, but there's hope. There is the return of Christ to set our sights on. You read Isaiah 59 about all the evils, and then get to the start of chapter 60. I don't have it in my notes, but let me just conclude with this since we've got another minute or so. Isaiah 59, it speaks of the iniquities that have separated us from our God. We don't know the way of peace. Verse 7 says, our feet run to evil. Verse 14, judgment is turned away backward and justice stands afar off. And then verse 15, truth, it says, truth fails. But then get to the end of this chapter and see how it leads into the next. It says, and the Redeemer shall come to Zion, and unto them that turn from transgression in Jacob, says the Eternal. And then verse 1 of chapter 60, this is Isaiah 60, verse 1, it says, arise, shine, for your light is come, and the glory of the Eternal is risen upon you. The glory of God has come upon us. The glory of Jesus Christ in his blessed and prophesied return to this earth to finally put an end to violence, to finally put an end to broken families, broken economies, to finally put an end to corruption, even at the highest levels of government, to finally implement perfect government, righteous government, holy religion, perfect religion, pure religion. That light shines even today in God's church. And soon it will light up the entire earth. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to submit some feedback, hopefully tomorrow or maybe next week we can get into more of our viewer feedback. But if you'd like to write us, you can send a comment to td@kpcg.fm. We thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you tomorrow.